And you're very welcome back, and you're listening to Monday's Kilkenny today here with Eugene Doyle. And it's the only radio station in Ireland with its very own dedicated astronomy slot. And this week there's plenty happening in the skies above Kilkenny and across Ireland, from the International Space Station blazing overhead every evening to spectacular close encounters between the Moon, Venus and Jupiter. And joining me, as usual, is David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. David, you're very welcome. Hello, David. Okay, David is gone off the line there for some reason, but fear not, we will get him back. Give me a second and we will try and phone him again. Now, I think we have David on the line. Have we, David?
We have indeed.
Oh, my God, I thought, yeah, there was definitely gremlins there. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, you're very welcome, David. How's your week been?
Very hectic with space stations, space chases, quite a few clear skies too.
Yeah,
nice to report.
One of these days, one of these shows, David, I'm going to do the show about you, because I want to find out, and not now, I want to find out about David Moore goes to bed when he sleeps. I want to know a little bit about the life movements of David Moore, because that'd be very, very exciting, I'm sure, because I would never say that I would confidently say you're never in bed before 5 o'clock in the morning anyway. Anyway, but look, I don't want to talk about that now. We'll get into that again at another time. But David, before we get into the big events, sky events this week, you mentioned that the International Space Station has been putting on a spectacular display every evening. What exactly can people expect to see when they look up? Tell us about what you've been looking at.
Yeah, well, over the weekend we had a space chase, but normally you see the space station blaze across the sky. I mean, the two brightest things in the sky at the moment are Venus and Jupiter closing in for their historic close approach next month. And the space station can outshine those, only it's very high up, even higher up than Venus. So it is very impressive. Even a few times last week, I just had tiny breaks in the clouds. You see nothing else. And when the space station went through one of the breaks, even a thinning in the clouds, out it popped, and you were able to see it. So it crosses the sky in about 2 or 3 minutes. The kind of speed a high-flying jet will cross the sky at. Not a zip across the sky. That's a meteor or shooting star if you see one of those. And there are lots of other satellites up there, but ISS is the biggest man-made object in space, so it outshines all of them and is really easy to see. Sometimes you get the whole family out to watch space history in the making in Irish skies.
Now, there are 7 astronauts on board, as we continually said, on the ISS. And for people spotting it across in the Irish sky, just remind our listeners how fast that is actually going, because it's going faster than a jet.
Yeah, it's about 17,000 miles an hour, roughly 5 miles per second. So if you imagine a map of Ireland, it would cross from the west coast to the east coast in about 60 seconds. That would be some journey if we do that with public transport. But up there, of course, there's no air. There's no friction.
Yeah.
So they don't notice it.
I think we'll try and get the public transport right.
Below, and a fantastic view it is, they all report.
Absolutely. I think we'll try and get the public transport right for us before we even decide to try and get it up 17,000 miles an hour. But anyway, when astronauts are looking out through that, I'm sure they can look out through windows and stuff like that. Obviously, that doesn't feel like that. It doesn't look like that when they're kind of windows, does it?
Yeah, they're about 400 kilometres, mixing miles and kilometres now, about 250 miles above the ground. And they actually have a special room with what's called the cupola, which is a very accurately made window that they can do all kinds of Earth observations, scientific-grade viewing, not just sightseeing. But apparently on their time off, they do get a bit of time off, that's their favorite place to sit, because you can see the Earth turning below. And if you go to NASA's YouTube channel, you can actually, they've installed a camera on the space station, just filming the view that those astronauts would get. And if, you know, you want to leave that on in the background while you're working away. It's very soothing to see the continents, the sea, the clouds below, just drifting past, because from that height, you don't realize the speed that you're traveling at. And when they had the resupply craft sent up to them over the weekend, of course, it has to match that speed, and then the two have to dock at 17,000 miles an hour. So it's an intricate, tricky process that you don't want anything going wrong with. Unfortunately, it didn't. They've now got 3 tons extra of supplies to keep them going a few more months.
And how long does that docking take to try and match the two of them up at 17,000 miles an hour? How long does it take to actually dock?
They launched on Friday night close to midnight, 11:05, and they didn't dock until midday yesterday. So you're talking about 1.5 days to get the docking done. And the first thing is the massive rocket just throws the spacecraft up and accelerates in 8 minutes up to almost 17,000 miles an hour. Then they check out where they are, and they can adjust the orbit then to put it on a slowly catching up trajectory with ISS. And when they get really close, then they slow up very much and just inch in and dock very carefully at way less than a mile an hour, for instance. So it's a very carefully controlled, choreographed orbit that docking that they've done many, many times before. This was the 34th cargo resupply CRS mission done by a Dragon spacecraft built by Elon Musk's SpaceX, and it's become a bit of a workhorse delivering supplies to the space station. The Russians have their Progress craft, a basic design that's been running since the 1960s, and that supplies them with unmanned supplies as well. So there are other companies as well that keep this space station running. It's our big laboratory in space, mankind's first outpost in space, should last to the 2030s and then be taken over by the moon base in 2033, NASA hopes, which will be the new outpost in space, a leap stone to Mars, NASA hopes. That's not going to happen any day soon.
And that resupply craft, it's unmanned, obviously. It's an automatic, it's all automatic, is it?
Yeah, I mean, they can be docked automatically or manually. The Russians do it automatically usually, but they can take over. They had the Mir space station 30 years ago now, before ISS. There were some crashes involving glitches with that. So it's not all plain sailing. There can be issues, and the whole crew are on standby just in case anything goes wrong. I mean, imagine one of the rockets jammed open and started powering the craft towards the space station. It weighs several tons. If it hit the International Space Station, which weighs about 400 tons, that's a major collision in space. Very unlikely. There are a lot of safety procedures, a lot of people on the ground and in space checking things out. But it's one where you're a little bit nervous and a bit docked and everything shut down and you're all safe, as they are today. So you can watch them tonight, two women and three men on board every night until this coming Saturday.
And that does that resupply craft then go back to Earth, or what happens?
Yeah, they often stay up there for 6 months. And what they do, the Russian one in particular, is take the cargo out, some new experiments and food and supplies coming up. And then they use it basically as a dustbin, and they throw all the rubbish into it.
Okay.
And eventually they undock it and then send it into the Earth's atmosphere, where it burns up harmlessly way above the ground.
Okay.
And that's the end of the Progress craft. This Dragon one, though, I believe it's due to come back unusually early in 1 month and bring back, you know, the results of experiments and the like as well. Okay. Double-check that to be sure. There's so much going on in space. It can be hard to keep up,
absolutely,
even if you're not getting any sleep.
Now, Monday night, tonight, sees Venus passing close to a very thin crescent moon. What makes this particular pairing so special, and why is the period between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. the ideal time to view it?
Yeah, this is a big event this evening. Venus, the brightest star-like object in the sky, and the moon, a lovely thin crescent, will get close together. There's a lovely diagram in the May issue of Astronomy Art magazine, if anybody has it, showing what to see. But basically, it's plainly visible to the naked eye, but it is happening low in the west. So about 10 o'clock, I've noticed that if the sky is dark enough, it's only a half hour after sunset, for you to see Venus. And the moon, of course, is as easy to see as Venus. You'll see Jupiter to the upper left. But if you look closely at the moon, you'll see a very thin crescent. Just 7% of its diameter, but a 14th of its diameter, is lit up. So even thinner than a banana, shall we say.
Okay.
And as it gets darker, they do get lower. But you should be able to see that the dark side of the moon is glowing faintly with Earthshine, because if you're on the moon, you'd actually see a full Earth in your sky. The Earth's bigger than the moon. It's more reflective as well. So the light falling on the moon's surface is about 10 times brighter than full moonlight is on the Earth. So you can see the dark side of the moon with the naked eye lit up very faintly. If you take a pair of binoculars to it, you can begin to see some of the structure on the dark side of the moon, just lit up by the sunlight reflected off the Earth. So that's a very spectacular sight. It doesn't happen very often. And so hopefully everyone will be watching. Somebody will get breaks in the clouds, and they'll email in a report from Astronomy Island magazine that we can publish. Okay. Maybe even a photograph on their smartphone if they're quick.
Absolutely. Now, Venus and Jupiter are also drawing closer together in the sky every night. But on June the 9th, they'll apparently be so close, your fingertip at arm's length will cover both planets. How rare is that kind of event, David?
Yeah, this is very rare. I can't remember it happening before. They will go close to one another every now and then, every few years. But it usually happens when they're too close to the sun and we don't get to see them very well. Venus will always be reasonably close to the sun. So this is a really spectacular event. Even the last few nights, looking at Venus low in the west and Jupiter to its upper left, they already look spectacular that far apart. And we use degrees in astronomy to measure them. But a handy one for the general public is your fist at arm's length. It's about 10 degrees across. And a couple of nights ago, last time I saw them, you could get about 2 and a bit fist widths between Venus and Jupiter. And that will keep decreasing until it's 10 times less. So even this week, you should notice it going from 2 fist widths down to about 1.5 by this day next week when we're on air again. And in the week after that, another fist width goes until June the 9th, when, as you said, your finger held at arm's length will cover the two brightest objects in the sky. And they'll be reasonably close for a few nights. So even if the weather doesn't cooperate on June 9th, you know, a few days before, a few days after, it's going to be a really spectacular double planet in the evening sky. Very easy to see with just the naked eye. So we're hoping everybody in the country will get to witness that, a free spectacle that Mother Nature is going to put on for us. It's only a line of sight effect, of course. Jupiter's actually about 4 times further away than Venus is. Venus 200 million, Jupiter nearly 900 million kilometers from a totally different planet. Venus the same size as the Earth, Jupiter 9 times wider. So if you have a telescope, you actually see the two disks of each planet around June the 9th.
David, I want to go because I'm going to have to leave out Jupiter on Wednesday night, on Thursday night, but they'll be on your site. But Friday night, I want to get to that very quickly because we've got about 2 minutes left. Friday night is your major Artemis Moonwatch event. You say people will be able to see what the Artemis astronauts saw as they flew around the moon last month. What kind of detail will people actually see through the telescopes?
Yeah, don't miss that Wednesday night, Jupiter near the moon. Really spectacular as well. But on Friday night, we'd actually be looking at Jupiter as well in telescopes. We're setting up giant telescopes to see the moon the way the astronauts did out the window last month. They were 60 times closer to the moon than we are, so we'll have telescopes magnify 60 and more times. We'll actually get a better view with all those craters, mountains. It's incredibly spectacular. Should be one of the most spectacular events we've ever run. So book your tickets on astronomy.ie today, and do get along if you're in the Lenser area.
Yeah.
And if not, we'll have pictures in the next magazine to show you what it looked like.
And it's just off the M50 there, and where the headquarters of Astronomy Ireland is. And Wednesday night, just as you said there, Jupiter's turn to sit beside the moon, and listeners could actually be spot stars like the Pollux and Castor above Jupiter. Also on Thursday night, it sounds particularly exciting for binocular owners because the Beehive Cluster beside the moon. Just very quickly, what is the Beehive Cluster, David?
Well, the first thing is all this is in the magazine. When you join, you're instantly emailed what to see in the sky, and the paper magazine will come a few days later in the post. And the beehive, you can see it on a dark night with the naked eye. It looks like a swarm of bees. And in a pair of binoculars, you can see dozens of stars. And the moon won't be too bright this Thursday. So getting the two in the same field of view, the moonlight won't swamp it like it often does. I'm hoping to get pictures if we do. They'll definitely be going into the next issue of the magazine. So sign up for the magazine. It's aimed at the general public. Costs about €1 a week.
And next Monday...
Astronomy.ie is all you need to do.
Absolutely. Astronomy.ie. And we'll also talk next week about the evening classes, which are starting next week. We'll talk about that on Monday as well. Now, that's we leave it there. That's David Moore from Astronomy Ireland. You can find out details of the Artemis Moonwatch event this Friday. The Ion Astronomy class is beginning on May the 27th. So we'll talk about them next Monday as well. Free sky watching upgrades and subscriptions to Astronomy Ireland magazine at Astronomy Ireland. Astronomy.ie. And don't forget, keep looking up this week because the skies over Ireland are putting on quite a show. David, thanks very much indeed for joining me.
My pleasure. Okay.